person right there who says something. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. You know, something on digital recording. No, we don't? Just, okay, never mind. All right, forget it. Hey, welcome to the program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thank you for joining us.
What would something like that cost money?
Speaking of money, this hour is sponsored by Sam Evans and his message. I'm in the Air Force, currently deployed to Afghanistan for 6 months. Your podcasts and calls, your podcasts and my calls to my wife are the two things that keep me going. My voice is censored. Thank you for speaking the truth for me. I'm proud to support your show. Well, that's great. Thank you. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate that a great deal. Appreciate it a great deal. All right, does anybody out there hear that horrible buzz? I hear a buzz, Kathy, in my headphones. Anybody else hearing the buzz? No? Well, I hope not. If you hear a buzz and it's not bees, some of you want a buzz, I know. If you hear a buzz and it's not bees, send me an email. The latest on that I have on Bradley Manning was in, I think it was Saturday's New York Times. He will be made to sleep naked nightly. Now, remember this bit from Orwell, 1984. O'Brien, how does one man assert his power over another, Winston? Winston thought. By making him suffer, he said. Exactly, said O'Brien, by making him suffer. Obedience is not enough. So that's the tactic, then, that they're using on PFC Bradley Manning, the Army intelligence analyst who has been accused by the Army of leaking government files to WikiLeaks. According to the Times, he will be stripped of his clothing every night. As what the Army calls, the Marine Corps, isn't it interesting? He is an Army intelligence officer being held in a brig at a Marine Corps base. Why do you suppose that is? Anyway, he will be stripped of his clothing every night as what his jailers call a precautionary measure to prevent him from injuring himself. An official at the Marine Brig at Quantico said on Friday, prevent him from injuring himself. He will be stripped of his clothing. How's that for a form of newspeak? Manning will also be required to stand outside his cell naked during a morning inspection every morning, after which his clothing will be returned to him, said a Marine spokesman, First Lieutenant Brian Villard. The lieutenant said, quote, because of recent circumstances, the underwear was taken away from him as a precaution to ensure that he did not injure himself. That's what the lieutenant said. The brig commander has a duty and responsibility to ensure the safety and well-being of the detainees and to make sure that they're able to stand trial. Well, there you have it. And for that reason, it's not here. For that reason, Bradley Manning is stripped naked every night because he might injure himself with his clothing. And the lieutenant who made this half-witted statement says the brig commander has a duty and responsibility to ensure the safety and well-being. 23 hours a day in solitary, stripped of his clothing at night, forced to stand in front of his cell in the morning. I read something the other day somebody or the brig commander was said, well, why isn't he given his clothes before he has to stand out in front of his cell? And this halfwit, a typical military intelligence response, the halfwit said, because the detainees are gotten up at 6 o'clock, at which point they stand in front of their cells. If we were to allow Private Manning to get dressed, we'd have to wake him up earlier. And we're not allowed to wake him up earlier. It would interfere with his sleep. Private Manning's lawyer, David Coombs, has written on his website, I think, quote, there can be no conceivable justification for requiring a soldier to surrender all his clothing, remain naked in his cell for 7 hours, and then stand at attention the subsequent morning. This treatment is even more degrading, considering that PFC Manning is being monitored both by direct observation and by video at all times. Coombs, the lawyer, then went on, if a person is at risk of self-harm, then you get them treatment. You get them to a mental health professional and address the issue. You don't strip them naked. There is no excuse, no justification to having a soldier stand at attention naked. There can be no mental health reason for that. End quote. What is happening to Bradley Manning, of course, is a classic case of psychological breakdown and torture. We torture people in this country at our whim. It depends on who you are in terms of the pecking order, and who your prisoner is. Well, I got an email from Joe in Temecula, California. I'll share it with you here. I won't have time to read the whole thing. Let's do this when we come back after the break, because I want to just, it's not all that long, but we only have about a minute here before the break. In this minute, let me tell you that the next event in Madison, Wisconsin, apparently will be farmers on Saturday coming. On Saturday, it says here, March 12th at 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., so far 2,020 farmers, and this was 2 days ago. I don't know what the number is now. They will be attending the protest at the Capitol. And what it is, farmers coming, they're bringing their tractors. This is in response to the new radical bill that the phony governor and Christian psychopath Walker is trying to enact on the unions. So March 12th, this Saturday, 12 to 2, over 2,000 farmers on tractors will be attending the protests. And this is from the Facebook page, from whose? I don't know, but this is what it says. Next week, farmers from across the Dairyland will bring tractors in solidarity to the Wisconsin Capitol to fight for labor rights and a just state budget. Rural communities will be disproportionately hurt by the cuts to education, and farmers in Wisconsin stand with state workers and all working and middle-class families in the state. The event is sponsored by Family Farm Defenders, Wisconsin Farmers Union, and the Land Stewardship Project. All farmers welcome and encouraged to come. If you have a tractor or you want information, go to Family Farm Defenders, or you can email familyfarmdefenders@yahoo.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Tractor sexy. We run back and forth till we run out of light. Take it to the barn, put it up
school and needs the speeches. The Bible was survival, that's what my grandma would teach us.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Sam Evans, who is in the Air Force in Afghanistan for 6 months. And he thanks us for speaking the truth for him. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it. Joe in Temecula writes, for months now my mind has been racing with thoughts about Bradley Manning, but in the end two questions always linger for me. One, why is Manning being treated this way? Two, why is the public being aware of how Manning is being treated? I mean, if they really didn't want us to know that Manning was being psychologically tortured, they could keep it from us. These questions have led me to conclude that the treatment of Bradley Manning is some sort of psychological operation being carried out by the gray-skinned men in black suits who run our military and government. The men who, as Cheney would say, quote, spend time in the shadows, end quote. The CIA, the spooks and ghouls who seem to draw energy from death, torture, and chaos. The treatment of Bradley Manning is no doubt putting a chill over not just Americans serving in the military, but all Americans. The message is, if you even think about leaking information, this is what will happen to you. This goes for intelligence officers and teenage hackers alike. The demons who hide in the dark, pulling the strings of the military-industrial complex, are none too happy with these leaks, and they want everyone to know that. I, for one, am sick of it all. Here we have a kid who leaked information because what he saw and read in those documents was making him sick. He had a visceral reaction to the atrocities and crimes being committed by the U.S. military and private contractors. Manning saw a moment where he could actually throw himself into the gears of the machine and stop it, at least for a few minutes. And he did. For a brief moment in time, the machine sputtered, stalled, and gurgled as it tried to process where the blockage was and what the consequences would be. But it didn't take long for the gears to restart, and Manning has been ground up into tiny bits in the process. While Manning stands naked in the dark, Bush and Cheney live very comfortable lives on the taxpayer dime. Sure, Bush and Cheney didn't leak classified information. They just fabricated and leaked false information in order to support their goal of preemptive war with Iraq. Is the lesson, then, that it's okay to leak classified information as long as it's false? Lindy England spent time in prison, punished for the horrors that happened to Abu Ghraib prison that she was ordered to carry out. At the same time, the man who should be in jail, Donald Rumsfeld, is out touring the country promoting a new book. Meanwhile, more information about the torture Bradley Manning keeps leaking out. Drip, drip, drip. Don't you think about it, Truth Seeker. Don't you think about it, Truth Seeker. Don't you dare think about exposing any of the crimes, lies, and atrocities you have witnessed. Two words for you if you do. Bradley Manning. And the gray-skinned men in dark clothing with dark fog engulfing him as he walks was recently seen exiting Quantico. As he began to step into the dark limo with tinted glasses to the nearby security detail, he almost seemed to vanish into the air like Kaiser Soze. The security detail looked at each other and shuddered. All of a sudden, a cold sweat broke out on their foreheads and the temperature seemed to elevate as if Mephistopheles was breathing on their necks. If there ever was a time that people could throw themselves into the machine and have an effect, it would be now. Every one of those guards at Quantico could do it. The guard being ordered to strip Manning down or keep him standing could refuse. The psychiatrist could blow the whistle on Manning's treatment. The brig commander, when the gray-skinned men in black show up detailing how Manning is to be treated, could refuse to comply. Of course, this would stall the machine for a little bit, but eventually the gears would start up again, and the prison guard, psychiatrist, and commander, too, would be ground into bits of Bradley Manning. But ever more guards and psychiatrists would be needed to administer the treatment to the new Bradley Mannings, and more people could continue to refuse to comply and throw themselves into the gears of the machine until one of two things happen. We either reclaim our humanity and our individuality, or we will all become ground up into Bradley Mannings. I am Bradley Manning, and so are you. And so is anyone who cares about truth and justice in this world. And then he cites the few sentences from Mario Savio from 1964 that I've been saying repeatedly on the program and signs off. Joe in Temecula. California. I don't disagree with Joe's point that the information is coming out slowly in order to intimidate people who get the information from Manning's civilian attorney. It's an old tactic. And if it is being used in this case, then certainly for people within the military services, as Manning was, I think it's being very effective. You got to remember who is being intimidated here. What's the average age in the U.S. military? Manning was 22. What's the average age of these young men and women who may be exposed to this kind of criminal misbehavior? As we saw in the YouTube or the video of the U.S. military gunship circling round and round and round, literally executing people on the ground. What's the average age of people that are in charge of that information? 19, 22, 23, 24, 20, 25? How dedicated to death and destruction were you when you were in your early 20s? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Working for something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe in. Oh, oh. Cradled by the hands of fate, the fate that sometimes wraps around too tight, so tight. They call me free.
I'm the rap. At one time, everybody thought the world was flat. Sounds like.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by a member of the Air Force currently deployed to Afghanistan for 6 months. Named Sam. He says, your podcast and my calls to my wife are the two things that keep me going. My voice is censored. Thank you for speaking the truth for me. I'm proud to support your show. Thanks, Sam. Prairie 2 writes, the reason the farmers, well, here's what he writes. What really has the Wisconsin farmers pissed off is the governor's new budget eliminates the state health insurance program that most older farmers depend on. And the younger farmers often survive by having their spouse work as a teacher or in local government, and this hits home for them as well. Well, Walker apparently thinks he's doing God's work. Are you aware of that? Matthew Rothschild, writing at theprogressive.org, said that in a talk to the Christian Businessmen's Committee in Madison about a year ago, Walker, who was raised by a Baptist preacher, spoke about his personal relationship with God, his so-called walk to Christ, and his belief in the need to, quote, trust and obey the Lord. He told the group, that when he was 13, he committed himself to Jesus. He said, this is what he said, quote, I said, Lord, I'm ready, not just in front of my church and the world, but most importantly, at the foot of your throne. I'm ready to follow you each and every day. I have just full out there said, I'm going to trust in you, Christ, to tell me where to go. And to the best of my ability, I'm going to obey where you lead me. And that has made all the difference in the world to me, for good times and bad. Walker said that God has told him what to do every step of the way. Oh, my God, here's another one. God talks to Scott Walker every morning. Walker goes on, including about what jobs to take, whom to marry, and when to run for governor. When he had met his first wife, he said, quote, "That night I heard Christ tell me, 'This is the person you're going to be with.'" He heard Christ tell him that. God and Christ talk to this man. Wow. He said he was trusting and obeying God when he took a job at IBM. Then at the Red Cross. Quote, "Lord, if this is what you want, I'll try it." He said it was all about trust and obey. Then he recalled how he got into the race for governor in 2006, only to withdraw, which he said was a difficult decision. He said, quote, "My wife and I prayed on it. I remember feeling so torn. I just didn't want to let people down. I said, 'Lord, I can't do this. I can't let people down.'" He said he found divine guidance from the daily devotion, his daily devotion, which was, the guidance was about, quote, about a guy who was a sailor. One of his buddies came along. They were in choppy waters and the guy was throwing up. He was told, "Stop looking at the waves, find a point of the horizon." And he did this and it worked. That's what God told him to do. Walker explains the meaning, quote, "I was focused all too much on the choppy waters of my life, about how uneasy it would be to look people in the face. I wasn't trusting and obeying my Savior. That morning, Christ said to me through that devotion, 'This is what you're going to do. Look at me. Find that point on the horizon, and you're going to be just fine.'" Or however Christ talks. I don't know how Christ and God talk to these freaks. Do you, truth seeker? Huh? What does it sound like? Does it sound like Dad? Does it sound like Dad from your childhood? Does it sound like Grandpa? Does it sound like Uncle Crazy from, you know, some branch of the family? What does it sound like when Jesus or God talks to George Bush or, in this case, Scott Walker? "I want you to go to work for IBM." "Yes, Jesus. Is there anything I should ask for while I'm there?" "Get a key to the executive toilet." Why? I've seen the urinal where the rest of the workers go. Don't go in there, Scott." "Okay, God." I mean, what is this madness? Scott Walker went on, quote, "God had a plan further down the road." He always does, doesn't he? "Little did I know I had to trust in Christ to obey what he calls me to do, and that was going to work out." End quote. He then qualified that statement a little. Scott said, quote, "I don't mean that means it's going to work out for a win. I don't believe God picks sides in politics." Oh, Jesus, please, somebody kill me now. Oh, my God. He urged everyone in the room to, quote, "turn over your life 100% to what Christ tells you to do." "Get a key to the executive toilet, Scott." "Once you do that," he said, "your life will be complete." 14 months later, at his inaugural prayer breakfast, Walker said, quote, "The great creator is the one from which our freedoms are derived, not the government." Annie Laurie Gaylor is the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. She said the following, quote, "It is frightening that the highest executive in our state suffers from the delusion that God dictates his every move. Consider the personal and historic devastation inflicted by fanatics who think they're acting in the name of their deity." End quote. Wouldn't you know it? So God and Jesus H. Christ have told Scott Walker to show no mercy to these rat bastards, whether they be children. Apparently, God was just lying through his teeth, or Jesus was lying through his teeth when he told the huddled masses 2,000 years ago about the children. Suffer the children to come into me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. And Scott Walker, of course, has a link to the real Jesus, the honest Jesus. Apparently, the old Jesus had to go through AA or something and get sober, because the old Jesus was talking stuff about feeding the multitudes and what you do to the least of these, you do it to me. And the old Jesus, the drunk, the drug-addicted Jesus, apparently, I mean, what the hell do I know? I don't believe any of this crap. But according to what I'm hearing, the old Jesus was some kind of a psycho. He had to be an addict, maybe crack. Did they have crack 2,000 years ago? Huh? Could that be? Or maybe hanging out with 12 guys was getting to him. I have no idea. But he used to say things like, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." He used to talk about justice. That's what I used to read in my grandma's Bible. But Scott Walker has found the essential Jesus, the one that says, "Screw them all, Scott. You listen to me. Go to work for IBM. Get a key to the executive washroom. Cut all those kids off of insurance in Wisconsin. Fire people that are busting their asses to try to make ends meet because of you rat bastard Republicans. Yeah, let them all go, Scott. Murder them, kill them, smash them, cause nervous breakdowns. I am your Lord and Savior, and I'm a mean son of a bitch. Are you aware of that, Scott? I will kick your ass. Ask the Israelites. I will kick ass so hard, Scott, if you don't do what I say. I will murder, I will burn, I will destroy, I'll make floods, earthquakes, fire rain down from hell. Do what I tell you, God damn it!" Scott? And at that point, Scott gets up off the floor and realizes he's got to go change his underwear because he just peed all over himself. And he goes out and addresses the Christian Businessmen's Association and says, "Listen, boys, let me tell you, Jesus talks to me. God talks to me. And he's told me, no mercy, no mercy on these rat bastards. You know why? Because they're Democrats. No mercy." Man, I don't know, man. I get so sick of this. I get so sick of this. But then I'm not a victim of this crap. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
All you liberals, you secular scum, what you gonna do when the rapture comes? I'm with the God Squad, I'll tell you what, Jesus Christ is gonna kick your butt. I'm with the God Squad, grab your gun, I'm coming to you live from Armageddon. Don't need to be teaching no biology, all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad. So
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Riding down the thoroughfare with a nose up in the air. A rig may be ahead, but he don't mind.
It's about 9 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Sam Evans, who's in the military, deployed to Afghanistan for 6 months. He says the podcast and his calls to his wife are the two things that keep him going. He says his voice is censored, and he thanks us for speaking the truth for him. And he writes, I'm proud to support your show. Thank you, Sam. We appreciate it very much. I have a kind of segues into the next little item I have here. From Friday, U.S. soldier sentenced for sport killing. Sheila sent this to me with the header, poor baby. An American soldier charged with killing Afghan civilians and mutilating their corpses. Killing civilians and mutilating their corpses has been sentenced to 60 days at hard labor. Why do they hate us? U.S. military judge has found Specialist Corey Moore, 22, same age as Bradley Manning, guilty of serious misconduct. Serious misconduct. Killing civilians and mutilating their corpses. He gets 60 days. Bradley Manning has been in prison how long now? In solitary, forced to stand naked. Son of a bitch. Do you believe this? Believe it. He was also found guilty of smoking hashish and assaulting another soldier, Adam Winfield, who blew the whistle on the activities of what Specialist Moore called his kill team. A dozen soldiers from Bravo Company Unit 5th Stryker Command Brigade in Kandahar now stand accused of various crimes in the case. According to a U.S. Army investigation, five members of the unit are charged with committing three counts of premeditated murder against unarmed civilians. Defendants include Special Sergeant Jeremy Morlock, really? Also 22, along with three others who were allegedly following orders from Staff Sergeant Calvin Gibbs, age 25. They're accused of killing Afghan civilians as a sport and collecting their body parts, including a human skull, as trophies. The seven others have also been charged with related crimes such as drug use, impeding the investigation, and retaliatory gang assault on the private who blew the whistle. The first unprovoked murder is alleged to have occurred on January 15th, 2010. 60 days in jail. For murdering unarmed, defenseless civilians and then mutilating their corpses. So let me ask you something, Truth Seeker. This would probably be a rough one if you have family or friends in the military, like our first hour sponsor here, Sam. But does an Afghan civilian or anybody in Afghanistan have an obligation to target any American that comes into his or her sights? Well, it'd be his sights, I guess. Does that Afghan civilian have an obligation to kill as many Americans as the Afghan can find in his country? Or Does the Afghan civilian have no rights whatsoever? Is that Afghan civilian supposed to absorb the deaths of children and women and men and old people because someone 10,000 miles away orders the killings for no reason, except, in this instance, sport? Dick Cheney ordered torture for no reason, except sport, because he could. And Dick Cheney is the type of psychopath that if he can do something and it results in grievous injury to other people, he will do it. That is Dick Cheney's nature. 6 months at hard labor for multiple counts of murder and mutilating a corpse. I'm sorry, 60 days. 60 days. Think about that one. Who writes, brought to you by the whooshing sound echoing from the heart-like area in the middle of zombie Dick Cheney's chest. Whoosh. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it. I don't even know why I bother with this, but what the hell. An online leak has emerged. Have you heard about this? Is at opednews.com. It reveals a system used by the employer, the biggest names in radio. You heard about that? Yeah, you heard about it, right? America's number one and number two radio broadcast hosts for a long time have been the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and the little puppet punk, Sean Hannity. After industry deregulation paved the way, their syndicating company, Premier Radio Networks, and Clear Channel Communications have used a Walmart model of steamrolling or acquiring small independent regional radio businesses, syndicating everything from robotized genre music stations to political talk show hosts selling snake oil. Who wrote this? Whoever, it's at opednews.com if you want to check it out. Anyway, according to an online account, Premier is hiring actors to fake on-air calls to radio shows. And, of course, nobody tells the public about the scam. Before being abruptly moved, Premier's website read the following, quote, Premier on call. is our new custom caller service. We supply voice talent to take/make your on-air calls, improvise your scenes, or deliver your scripts. Using our simple online booking tool, specify the kind of voice you need, and we'll get you the right person fast. Unless you request it, you won't hear the same voice again for at least 2 months, ensuring the, and they say this with a straight face, authenticity of your programming for avid listeners, end quote. You won't hear the same voice for at least 2 months, therefore ensuring the authenticity of your programming for avid listeners. Anyway, Op-Ed News goes on as reported, once the actor, quote, passed the audition, he would be invited periodically to call into various talk shows and recite various scenarios that made for interesting radio, end quote. In addition, the source was specifically told there would be no on-air disclosure of the fabricated nature of the call. He subsequently landed the job at $40 per hour and a minimum of 1 hour of work per day. This suggests an array of radio clients is broadcasting bogus calls by actors, categorized by their accents or vocal qualities. Next time you hear a gruff, clean, crisp, deep, or textured voice, you might just be hearing a premier on-call actor playing a real person, but they can never go public because they're gagged from talking about it. The ironclad confidentiality clause also removed from the website, but cached here as reported, quote, here it is, confidentiality agreement. By requesting an audition, you are also agreeing to keep the details of the audition and the type of work that you may perform confidential. This applies to information acquired while working for Premier or any of its affiliates. Disclosure to any third party, sharing project information, or publicizing what you do, including via social media, may be considered grounds for dismissal or further action, mofo. We'll send you to the brig at Quantico. Your ass will stand naked. We don't mess around. Now, that like I said, I don't know why I say it. Just mentioning these filthy bastards' names. Hannity, Limbaugh, Beck, Savage, O'Reilly. The rest of these people, it turns my stomach. You know, it's hard to even say their names. It really is. Scum. Just scum. Hey, NASA biologist has claimed that he has discovered microfossil organisms, ancient bacteria, inside slices of rare meteorites that fell to Earth and were found in France, Tanzania, India, Canada, and the icy Yamato Mountains of Antarctica. The Journal of Cosmology published a paper by Richard Hoover of NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama. Since been published, this scientific debate has began over the weekend. Hoover, there's some pictures. If you go to, where was this? Is this at AOL? It may be at AOL. There's some pictures of filaments. When you look at it, if you're a trained biologists, you may see something there. The filaments represent the remains, Hoover says. The filaments represent the remains of extraterrestrial life forms that grew on the parent bodies of the meteorites when liquid water was present, long before the meteorites entered the Earth's atmosphere. The finding has direct implications to the distribution of life in the cosmos. Now, remember what Carl Sagan said. Extraordinary claims demand extraordinary evidence. You know, it works both ways. You know, people that claim God talks to them, you know, you better prove it there, bro. But people who claim that they have discovered microfossils of bacteria, you know, the proof has got to be in the presentation, I guess. Anyway, writing in the Journal of Cosmology, a member of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, who is the journal's editor-in-chief, acknowledges Hoover's, quote, respected record of accomplishment at NASA, end quote. This scientist also says the journal issued, quote, a general invitation to over 5,000 scientists from the scientific community to review the paper, end quote. And, of course, that'll take a while. But there's already debate about it, and you know, some scientists are lining up, biologists, microbiologists, paleobiologists, whatever, astrophysicists are lining up on two sides of the issue. Yes, these organisms do represent microfossilized life. No, they do not. They don't represent anything. They are just designs or etchings in these rocks that were at one time part of meteorites. But my question has always been, the science is of peer review has not been completed here yet, and I'm going after the naysayers, the ones that say no, this is impossible. I've always wondered, why is it so difficult for humans to consider the if some humans, certainly not me, and probably not you, truth seeker, but especially the religious types, it is impossible for them to consider life outside the realm of the psychopathic God of theirs that created this mess here on Earth. According to these people, Muslim, Jew, and Christian, everything that's here is everything that there is. All the rest of it is just flung into the infinite for our entertainment, I guess. I'm not sure, but have you ever noticed that? It's always been my belief, and this may or may not be true, but it's always been my belief that we're extraterrestrial evidence of extraterrestrial life discovered that was evidence that was irrefutable. The religious people would go insane because it would undermine, if not utterly and absolutely and finally destroy, all of their nonsense about pillars of salt and living in the belly of a whale and talking snakes and the rest of it, you know? The hour. This hour is sponsored by Andy Harrison, who writes, brought to you by the whooshing sound echoing from the heart-like area in the middle of Zombie Dick Cheney's chest. Whoosh. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Thank you, Andy. Now, in addition to the apparent inability of so many people even to consider alien life forms. Wait a minute. What is this? Okay. I'll get to that in a second. In addition to the inability of people to do that, why, you know, Scott Walker now is on the record that Jesus and God talk to him and tell him what to do. Jesus and God talk to him and tell him what to do. Do Jesus and God, in Scott Walker's fevered state, understand the criminal code in various countries? I don't think Jesus and God only talk to Americans, right? I think they're evangelicals who believe this stuff. I mean, maybe in a village somewhere in the Yucatan, in Amazonia, down in South America, a village way back in the jungles where the legal code that the people there use is something they've used for a long time. And some missionaries a couple of years ago brought them the murder and guilt and derangement of Christianity. And now, does God and Jesus talk to the head man in this village and say, well, we think that the next time you and your boys go on a raid, instead of lopping off the heads of just the men in that village up the Manaus River, lop off the heads of the women too. Okay, you got it? Head lopping for both sexes. You have that. You know, and the Amazonian headman would say, yeah, okay, I got it. And then in this part of the God, of the world, well, this part of the God too, right? It's all in the Godhead. It's Vishnu sleeping or something. I don't know. So, in this part of the world, then Scott Walker says that God tells him to cause as much misery as he can with as many people as he can in the state of Wisconsin by laying off people, firing people, taking away the rights to collective bargaining, ending insurance, stomping on this program, ending that program. Now, is he following David Koch or is he following David God? Which one is it? It can only be, I mean, a man can't have two masters, right? Who said that? Was that Paul? Could have been. So who is Scott Walker? I mean, who is Scott Walker listening to? If I walk out on the street tomorrow in Atlanta, Georgia, and grab the nearest pedestrian and lop his head off, and when the police come, I'm standing there holding aloft a bloody head with a decapitated body on the ground, still kind of spasming. And if I say to the cops, well, Jesus told me to do this. I mean, come on, this guy whose head I just lopped off, he was a demon. Really? He looks like a normal person, Mike. No. That's just because you don't see through the eyes that I see through. Jesus told me this was a demon. Now, this happens all the time, truth seekers. We had a case here in Atlanta 2-3 years ago. A man and woman living in a motel with 2 or 3 or 4 children, and they decided to butcher the children because Jesus told them to. God told them. God said. And these were, you know, these were people who believed in heaven and hell and demons and haints and spooks and ghosts and guardian angels and not so guardian angels and white angels and black angels and green ones. And they all got together and said to this couple, kill your children. So they did. The same spooks and haints got together and said to George Bush, I want you to go to Iraq and Afghanistan and kill as many as you can. I want hundreds of thousands slaughtered. And George did. I mean, so the governor of Wisconsin is a delusional son of a bitch who says he does things because he hears voices in his head. I mean, is that sane? Somebody tell me. Somebody send me an email. For Christ's sake, is that sane? And I use small c. I use it as just throwaway words. When I say, oh, my God, I'm not talking about, Scott, I want you to fire all the farmers. You know. What is this? I'm sure Hitler was told the same thing. They all are, aren't they? To kill and loot and pillage. Didn't God tell Joshua to go into the land of Canaan and butcher people as if they were hogs? I mean, 25 before the hour. By the way, The Guardian, the UK, under the headline, Don't Forget Bradley Manning, mentions what we've been talking about here. Tomorrow morning, Private First Class Bradley Manning will be required to stand naked for the daily roll call in U.S. Marine Base Quantico, Virginia. Blah, blah, blah. The reason for this nakedness is that Manning had complained about being constantly under watch as part of a, quote, prevention of injury, end quote, regime, and had remarked flippantly that if he wanted to harm himself, he could do so with his underpants or with his flip-flops. As a result, his underwear and footwear are now confiscated from his cell overnight, and he has to present himself naked for inspection in the morning before they returned. If Manning had read his Catch-22, as he doubtless has, he would know from the experience of Yossarian that the U.S. military does not do irony. In solitary confinement, as he has been for the past 10 months, he may wonder how much of his predicament is known to the outside world. In many ways, he's become the forgotten man of the WikiLeaks story, although it is Manning who faces the most severe penalties, and Manning who is accused of having leaked the most explosive items passed on to the world through WikiLeaks, notably the collateral murder video of an attack on civilians in Iraq in 2007 by a U.S. Apache helicopter. One person who has raised his voice in Manning's behalf is Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon Papers 40 years ago. Manning, like Ellsberg, is driven by idealism rather than anything more sinister or mercenary. He must hope that people still do give a damn about war crimes and will continue to do so when he finally comes to trial. The casual taking of life and the hypocrisy that he has exposed are far more serious than the offenses of which he's been accused. The way he's being treated and the charge of aiding the enemy, which enemy has not been specified, doubtless one will eventually be found, are very similar to the way Ellsberg was pursued. The Bradley Manning Support Network, and you can go to that website, just Google it, the Bradley Manning Support Network gives details of the rally planned to support him in Quantico on 20 March. It would be further cruel irony if the man accused of turning the spotlight on shameful behavior should suffer because not enough attention is being paid to his own predicament. Yeah, I've been some of the people who are going to this demonstration in at the White House on the 19th, of which I'm going to attend, have talked about. There's a couple of buses going out to Quantico. I'd like to go, but I think I just don't think I can make that part of this demonstration weekend. March 19th is the I hate to use the word anniversary, I don't know what else to use, of our murderous invasion and activity that resulted in hundreds of thousands of dead civilians in Iraq because, according to George Bush, God told him to invade Iraq. God tells Scott Walker to prevent public workers from bargaining collectively. God tells him to do that. Jesus told Scott Walker whom he should marry. I mean, if that is not a sickness, a delusion, an insanity, who does that? Who walks around with voices in their head telling them, you know, turn left, turn right, go buy a pound of bacon, marry that woman, invade this country, run for governor. No, don't run for governor. No, run for, okay, run for governor. I mean, who walks around with that kind of stuff in their head? Am I missing something? Am I missing something? Jesus, God, so to speak. I don't know. I just don't know what to think of that stuff. Now, just a little bit more here on religion, then we're going to move on. There's a preacher out there Rob Bell. Have you heard about this guy? He's got a new book out. And apparently, this is one of the country's most influential evangelical pastors. I've never heard of him. But he is challenging traditional Christian views of heaven and hell and eternal damnation and yada, yada, yada. And the big money evangelical leaders, you know, the ones that are really in the business of saving souls, they're really pissed off at this guy because he's undermining their garbagey nonsense, and that's going to hit him in the bank account. He describes in his book as misguided and toxic the dogma that, quote, a few select Christians will spend forever in a peaceful, joyous place called heaven, while the rest of humanity spends forever in torment and punishment in hell with no chance for anything better. Yeah, and he points out the fact, are we to believe that Mohandas Gandhi is burning in hell? Are we supposed to believe that? Yo, hey, you evangelical Christian, because, you know, if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your personal savior, you are going to burn in hell forever. Now, this guy's not some punk, 10-member congregation storefront preacher. He has the Mars Hill Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, has 10,000 members. Apparently, he is some sort of a Christian celebrity and somewhat of a hipster. Is that the guy who always does his sermons in his blue jeans? Maybe I have seen this guy. Maybe I have. According to the Times, the Fuhrer was touched off last Saturday by a widely read Christian blogger based on promotional summaries of the book and a video produced by Mr. Bell. In his blog, Between Two Worlds, the blogger said that the pastor, quote, is moving farther and farther away from anything resembling biblical Christianity. The guy wrote, it is unspeakably sad when those called to be ministers of the word distort the gospel and deceive the people of God with false doctrine. Really? Stick with the talking snake thing. I mean, that, you know, and the belly of the whale thing and Lot's wife turning into a pillar of salt and then Lot and his two daughters getting it on so that humanity... Yeah, stay with that story, right? That's a good one. You know, this idea that half this stuff is nonsense. No, 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 no. That's apostasy. That's a heretic speaking. But the other stuff, you know, yeah. Noah and the flood. Boy, had a hell of a time getting Australian back. Get those roos, didn't he? Jesus, God. One leading evangelical, John Piper of Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, wrote, farewell, Rob Bell. You know, he's going to hell. The head of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary said in a blog post that by suggesting that people who do not embrace Jesus may still be saved, Mr. Bell was at best toying with heresy. Gandhi is in hell, you dumb son of a bitch. He's burning every day. Of course he's in hell. Why wouldn't he be? He wasn't a Christian. Oh, please. Oh, yeah. Have you heard about this? Senator Roy Ashburn. Is he a state? Yeah, he's a state senator out in California. You folks listening in California might know him. He's from Bakersfield. He is another one of those filthy anti-gay crazy people. You know, so-called family values. What has he done? He's a fierce opponent of gay rights. He was fighting marriage equality and organizing anti-gay marriage rallies as part of his traditional family values campaign. Well, guess what? Guess what happened to Senator Roy? Yeah, it just always happens, right? Last Wednesday around 2 a.m., California Highway Patrol noticed he was weaving and driving erratically in downtown Sacramento. And turns out that he was drunk and he had his boyfriend with him and they had just come from Faces, a gay nightclub in downtown Sacramento, just prior to his arrest. So, you know, he, wouldn't you know it, I think he's released some kind of a statement. But, you know, here we go again. You know, somebody who was violently anti-gay to the point of denying people just simple, basic human rights, getting out there and actively trying to destroy other people's lives. You miserable son of a bitch, all because you couldn't accept your own reality. So here we go. Here's another one of the haters, and it turns out that he is the object of his own hatred. What a shame. You know, living in a closet is real constricting to the soul. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back.
The lunatic is in my head. The lunatic is in my head. You raise the blade. You make the chain.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Got a monkey on your back. 10 before the hour.
Just one more fix, love might do the trick. One hell of a
boy, so many things here. You know, I've been quoting the Mario Savio, part of a statement from all those years ago at University of California, Berkeley. And I got this email from Tedine. Tedine, is that how you say it? Tedine in Vancouver, Washington. Tedine writes, the machine can be stopped. The Egyptians did it. Their guide was a little book published by the Albert Einstein Institution, an organization dedicated to the strategic use of nonviolent action. And, of course, the title is From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp. Are you all familiar with this? You know, I have to say, I had never heard of Gene Sharp until a couple of weeks ago. Read about him in the newspaper, in the Times. I think it was in the Times. This little book that he wrote, it's a handbook. It's been translated into 31 languages and has been used to remove oppressive governments in Poland, Hungary, Argentina, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, and many others. From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp. And I what did I read about him? Is he still alive? I think he is. I think he's in his 80s. Somebody will let me know. But if, definitely, this is a book that I've got to read, and perhaps you would too. From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp, just like it sounds. Gene Sharp, S-H-A-R-P. Got to get that one. What else? Oh, you can interpret this any way you want. This is from Bhubaneswar, India. Bhubaneswar. That would probably be a better pronunciation. Indian police detained two people after an angry mob of fired workers burned to death a senior executive of a steel factory, an official said Friday. After learning they were laid off, about a dozen workers attacked a vehicle carrying Radhe Shyam Roy as he was leaving the factory in eastern Orissa state, dousing the Jeep with gasoline and setting it on fire. That's according to police superintendent I'm not even going to attempt his name. Two other people in the vehicle were allowed to flee, but Mr. Roy, 59, was trapped inside and later died of severe burns, according to the police superintendent. Police were questioning two workers, and their formal arrest on murder charges was likely. Incidents of industrial violence are common in India, where workers often target executives in cases of wage disputes and job losses. In 2008, scores of dismissed employees of an Italian manufacturing company, Graziano Trasmissioni in India, used iron rods and wooden sticks to beat to death the company's chief executive officer, the local CEO, on the outskirts of New Delhi, an Indian man. Burn them alive. You fired me. You laid me off. You are so greedy that you are destroying my job. Okay. I will burn you to death. Okay. I will beat you to death with sticks and iron bars. Woo. So you see, when I say, and usually right-wing punk asses listening to this program when I say this, always, you know, right away, get it out there so people can see it. Look what he said. Look what that son of a bitch said the other night. When I talk about in a different time, different place, so-and-so would be taken out behind such-and-such and a bullet be put in his brain, you know, and these right-wingers don't understand that that's absolutely the truth. You know, it's just the truth. I mean, injustice is injustice, and sometimes it can push people to do things that even though they may have to pay for that action with their own lives by being hanged or executed by the state, there is that momentary satisfaction that is transcendent. So anything that comes beyond that is immaterial to the transcendency of saying to the boss, you have had control over me for 35 years. You have beat me into the ground. You have taken every bit of my body and my soul, and now you're kicking me to the curb. For that, I will kill you. It's a very simple exchange. My life for yours. And then the exchange takes place, and the boss is rendered lifeless. And the worker, if he or she is convicted, will suffer the consequences. But that transcendent moment when you, the worker, when he or she, the worker, knows that justice has been served, even though it's a very primal, primitive, vicious justice, it's still justice, isn't it? I don't know. But when I toss those out there about people being taken out behind the company headquarters, you know, that's an allusion to the Stalinist purges and the Red Chinese, you know, when they, we still call them Red Chinese, or do we call them Chinese now? You know, the Chinese, if somebody is convicted of business fraud, they said, you know, there may be a quick trial and then a quicker execution, you know. It goes by pretty quickly. So, all right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Jim from Riverside, California. Message. Thanks for all the hard work, Mike. Keep it up. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for sponsoring an hour of the program. I appreciate it very much. We're going to open up the phones. If you want to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. Today, the President of the United States approved the resumption of military trials for detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, which ends a two-year ban. According to the Associated Press, it was the latest acknowledgement that the detention facility Obama had vowed to shut down within a year of taking office will remain open for some time to come. But even while announcing a resumption of military commission trials, Mr. Obama reaffirmed his support for trying terrorist suspects in U.S. courts. He said, quote, "I strongly believe that the American system of justice is a key part of our arsenal in the war against Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, and we will continue to draw on all aspects of our justice system, including Article III courts, to ensure that our security and our values are strengthened," end quote. Well, isn't that nice? So now Barack Obama also engages in doublespeak, newspeak, in order for the American system of justice to be demonstrated as a wondrous thing, the American system of justice will be bypassed for the military system of justice. Very simple. It's a very simple equation. 2 + 2 = 5, period. The White House spokesperson also reiterated that the administration remains committed to eventually closing the torture and prison facility there. I'm editorializing, but that's essentially what it says. But, you know, you got to wonder what he said on Monday, the decision to resume military trials. That doesn't seem to be bringing that outcome any closer, does it, folks? The first trial likely to proceed under Obama's new order would involve Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri, the alleged mastermind of the 2000 bombing of the USS Cole. Nashiri, a Saudi of Yemeni descent, has been imprisoned at Guantanamo since 2006. House Armed Services Committee Chairman Howard Book McCone, Republican in California, said he was pleased with Obama. Book is pleased that Obama's decided to restart the military commissions. So there's another one of the great promises made by Barack Obama that caused a lot of us to vote for him instead of voting for a writing candidate, a third party candidate, or just avoiding the stinking process altogether. There's another reason for those of us who voted for him based on his promises to realize the wisdom in George Bush's statement, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, won't get fooled again," or whatever the hell he said. Remember that? Military commission trials to start anew. And what else? Yeah, I had asked last week, and I got one answer, what the contractors who, the bottom feeders, the war profiteers, who have flooded into Iraq and Afghanistan like so many maggots around a chunk of rotting meat, you know, what they had ever accomplished in their taking of hundreds of millions of billions of dollars from the American taxpayer. all that I was aware that they had ever accomplished was providing poisoned water and rotten food and showers that electrocuted a soldier and theft, fraud, deceit, lies, stealing. The most vicious underside of the war racket that has existed certainly in my and your lifetime. I realize the contractors in Vietnam were equally as vicious, but there was resistance in Vietnam. There was the North Vietnamese. There was the Viet Cong. There has been no resistance in Iraq. And the resistance in, you know what I'm talking about. Don't send me an email and say, what about, you know what I'm talking about. And in Afghanistan, the resistance has been profound and unending, but it has been in isolated areas where the contractors don't go. They don't go to areas where, the argument could be made, I won't make it, but the argument could be made that certain social improvements are lacking and needed. No, they don't go there. They stay where they can steal as much as they can get their hands on. Anyway, got an email from Gigi. Oh, I think it's G. Yeah, GFS. I'll call her Gigi. She writes, Mike, hey, they are pretty efficient. Oh, anyway, let me back up. I had said if you can name one thing that these contractors have completed, and somebody said the American Embassy in Baghdad, which has so far cost three quarters of a billion. Yeah, $750 million. Well, GFS and Gigi writes, hey, they are pretty efficient in appropriating every dollar they possibly can, using any number of unethical and illegal means, including theft, fraud, double and triple billing, and on and on and on. They've done wonders building and completing their own resort-like accommodations they live in while they're over there. They have been exceptionally successful in finishing up the destruction of American citizens who happened to be women who were raped and abused by working for those contractors in those Middle Eastern countries. They've successfully stopped working on these cases and any prosecution of the perpetrators. They've also refused to take any responsibility for the damage done to these women. They've successfully learned how to move money and assets into hidden accounts in certain countries, such as Austria, called hidden Truhans, where they cannot be traced or investigated by any law enforcement or investigative agency. They're very good at what they want to do. Yeah, the repeated rape of women in these areas has, all it gets, really, after a bit of media attention, there was some pretty serious attention by the Times, by the Post, indeed. But what is done about it? The military claims that they have no mechanism in place to stop it if it's done by contractors working for the military. The contractors back in the States say they have no way to prevent it if it occurs in an overseas situation, because the laws of the United States either A, don't apply, or B, the standard investigative systems are not in place. And finally, there is no law in these countries that determines how or lays out a case of how to prosecute Americans charged with rape. So the victims, the women who are assaulted, beaten, raped, invaded, they can just shut up and go home, right?
afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Oh my goodness, look who's here. Blue is in Seoul, South Korea. Hey, Blue, how are you?
Well, I've had better years, Mike.
Yeah?
I'm not going to go into a long thing about this, but I had an accident in Poland. My leg was broken, and it turns out that it wasn't properly set. And I got septicemia, and basically I was a passenger all the way across Canada and the Pacific, and we came into Seoul, and I was taken to the hospital. And so I've been out of action for about, I don't know, almost 2 weeks now. But I've had the opportunity basically to do nothing except to watch the media and read the papers. And as it happens, I speak Korean. I read the language. I can write it fairly well. And, you know, I thought it would be interesting to make a couple of observations about what the rest of the world thinks.
Okay.
About what's going on, because once again, as I've noticed so often, what Americans seem to think, if they think at all about what's going on in their country, is completely in opposition to what other people are thinking, as they observe what's going on there. And actually, there's quite a bit of press freedom here. I think there are a lot of myths about Korea, that it's a dictatorship, South Korea. That's not exactly true. And when Koreans are upset about something, they go into the streets and they make noise, and they usually get results of one kind or another. And, of course, it's a corporate state, but there are benefits for the Koreans in that the corporations are held on a pretty tight leash. So there is a certain amount of press freedom, a certain amount of political freedom. I'm guessing probably more than there is in your country at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's going on is that all the Korean media are watching what's happening in Wisconsin and in the other states. And what they don't understand is why it appears as if the folks in Wisconsin have given up entirely. And there's no real opposition to what's happening in the other states at all.
Why do you think the people in Wisconsin have given up entirely? What makes you think that?
Well, apparently, the police came into the Capitol building where I'd been only about 10 days ago, and asked the demonstrators to leave. And instead of telling them to stuff themselves where the sun doesn't shine, they very calmly and quietly left. And then apparently a judge has made a ruling that they can't come back in again, or only at certain times in certain prescribed ways. And they're going to be assigned these so-called free speech zones. And there's a lot of reporting here about Democratic legislators being beaten up when they've attempted to get back into the building.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a perception that, you know, they sat there for 17 days and they were doing well, and then all of a sudden they gave up and negated the whole purpose of the demonstration in the first place. And Koreans find this very peculiar. And at the same time, there's a lot of anger about the continued occupation of Korea by something like 65,000 American troops,
right,
which have exacerbated the situation with Kim Jong-il. And if you'll recall, 10 or 12 years ago, Bill Clinton, whom I don't have much use for the guy, but he and Madeleine Albright and Bill Cohen had managed to reach some sort of accommodation with this guy, Kim Jong-il, and lessen the tensions without giving away the shop at the same time. And then, of course, the Bush people came along and negated all of that by essentially saber-rattling and so on, and reneging on all the agreements that Madeleine Albright had made. And Obama's continuing that policy of threatening the Koreans and demonizing them in the media and so on. So there's a lot of anger and a lot of puzzlement here, as there is in the rest of the world, about what the bloody hell's going on, and where, you know, where's the opposition in your country? Where's the rage?
Well, it's a fair question, and hopefully, you know, I would disagree with you. Let me put this the proper way. I would disagree with your conclusion about the workers in Wisconsin. Yes, they may have left after 17 days. There is now an effort, it's my understanding, to take the next legal step against this this governor, and that is to start a recall petition to get him out of office. Hey, I'm going to have to break. Hold on, Blue. I'll come back and try to finish that thought. We have to take a break here. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking with Blue, who is calling tonight from South Korea. All right, you know, I can't give you a definitive answer because I wasn't in Wisconsin. I think the people who protested took it as far as they could, short of just getting violent, and I can interject,
sure. Mike, I think what I'm seeing here in Korea mirrors what I've seen all over the world for the last few years, and that is, you know, people in so many countries have realized they've been buggered over and over again by a legal system that's controlled by the rich and powerful, and that the only way they get results is, as the Koreans have seen over and over, they've brought down any number of governments who've made them all these promises and again, buggered them with the legal system. And they finally said, look, we've had enough of this, and they go out in the streets and they get real meaningful change. And a few years later, maybe they have to do it all over again. And people are saying, what in the bloody hell is wrong with you people? And I know you're going to get all kinds of emails, and people are going to call in and calling me that effete, wine-swilling Australian yabo. I don't give a damn, frankly. What in the bloody hell is wrong with you people? As you said, I think you said the other day, they should have occupied that capital. They should have been all around it. And when these bloody cops came and said, you know, leave, they should have said, like hell, over our dead bodies.
Well,
They would have been confronted with the necessity of shooting these people, which I doubt they would have done, although they might have, who knows. But to just accede to this demand, and then, you know, we heard the story about the planted ammunition. I mean, who's going to go out if they've lost their job and they're losing their benefits? They're going to go to the hardware store and buy 22 caliber ammunition and strew it all over the Capitol? I mean, that's such a bloody obvious plant.
Well, let me at least make an attempt here to answer what you're saying, and I sure. I doubt if the answer is going to be very satisfactory. But the reason this country has not exploded into violence yet is I think simply because people here are conditioned not to do that. I think most people are. Yeah, we have people here who do commit acts of violence. This Westboro Baptist Church, their acts of violence when they hold up their signs, you know, thank God for dead soldiers, God hates fags, you know, that kind of madness does exist here. But the working class, the middle class has had for the past 50 years, a fairly easy ride in this country. And in that period of time, I think most of us have lost the trigger that maybe earlier generations knew how to pull, the trigger inside of us that said, no, that's it. I'm not taking it anymore. I'm reminded of the early union movements in this country, not so early, in the 30s and 40s. The union movements, the civil rights movement, where people would do what you're suggesting, would show up in the thousands and say we shall not be moved, and the police would move in and heads would be busted and people would be taken for
night. If I may, Mike, for a moment.
Sure.
I object to describing that as acts of violence. That's reacting to violence, standing up to violence, countering violence.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, what are you suggesting? That we should arm ourselves and take on the government?
I'm saying, for example, when the Koreans, to put it in the context of Korea, when over and over again they've been confronted since the early 80s several times by governments that made them promises and then reneged on them and then began to tighten the screws, people came out into the streets and said no, and they wouldn't disperse, they wouldn't leave, they wouldn't stop, and we saw this in Egypt and Libya, we saw this in Tunisia, where people said, we simply will not leave. Now, if you want to call that an act of violence, go right ahead. I don't, frankly. I call it standing up and letting yourself be counted, rather than simply saying, oh, the police have asked us to leave,
so
we're going to go home.
I thought you were advocating a resistance that could result in violence. I thought that's what you were saying. It may come to that, Blue. I mean, you put me in the position here, and unfairly, I think, of trying to defend a country's actions, a country of 330 million people. I can't get inside the heads of middle-class school teachers who make an honest effort. A middle-class school teacher in Madison, Wisconsin is a hell of a big difference from a rice farmer on the outskirts of Alexandria, Egypt. And if you can't process or you can't consider that difference, then that's a problem.
How different is he from a worker in Seoul?
But no way. There's a big difference there too. A worker in Seoul, South Korea, and a worker in Madison, Wisconsin. The objectives may be the same to get economic justice, but the tactics are going to be different for a number of reasons. And the reasons are cultural. The reasons are political. The reasons are, the differences in how, using your example, residents of Korea look at proper resistance and residents of the United States do. And I'm sure the residents of Australia would look at it more like the American way than would the South Korean way. So here's the problem that I have sometimes in talking with you. You suggest that there is only one way to react, and that is to absolutely refuse to be moved, no matter how many heads are cracked. You may be right. That may be the way to do it. But you cannot condemn people in this country because we haven't gotten to that point yet. At least middle-class white people haven't. So, the examples are all over. We don't have to look into Egypt or Korea for examples of massive resistance. We can find them in this country, and we know that the potential for violence is there, whether it was the anti-war movement or the civil rights movement, whatever it is. But as far as middle-class Americans whose jobs are being taken from them or their rights to collective bargaining...
Wait, I'm
almost finished. If people have not yet in this country gotten to the point where they are willing to put themselves in that situation where they will not be moved, that it will take action by the police or the National Guard or the military. If we haven't gotten to that point yet, for Christ's sake, don't condemn Americans who haven't quite gotten there yet. We've had a 50-year ride of what other countries would see as luxury. And
If I can ask you this, though.
Sure.
What do you suppose will be the result of this attempt to
I don't know yet. I don't know if it stops
through this legal process.
If it stops here, nothing. will be the result. If it doesn't stop, if it continues, then there will be results. I don't know where this is going to go, Blue, but it has an organic aspect to it. This Saturday, there's plans for over, I think the list so far is up to around 2,000 farmers in Wisconsin who are descending on the state capitol in their tractors because they are being hurt by this action by this crazy governor. It came out today that the governor takes his orders through voices in his head from God and Jesus. So, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know your observations of this country are, you know, for the most part, they're right on. They're fair observations. But what you see as a solution, I will admit, I don't speak for 330 million Americans. I speak for one, myself. And my attitude is people in this country are not yet to the point where we're willing to get our heads broken open the way early union organizers were at a different time in this country. We're not yet ready. And that day will come. If it doesn't stop, I have enough faith in my fellow countrymen that day will come where people will say, no, goddammit, that's enough. We've had it. We're not moving. Now, why they haven't done it in Madison, I can't answer, Blue. I just can't.
I'd like to ask you just one thing, though, and I don't know whether we've ever come to this particular point, but do you actually believe you still have a functioning democracy in your country?
No, of course not. And nobody with any sense in this country believes that either. Of course not. We lost our democracy about 30 years ago. I mean, really lost it.
I suppose what I'm saying is I'm reflecting what I'm seeing around the world in the opinions of other people in other countries where they've actually stood up against repressive governments. And they look at what's going on in your country and saying, how long is it going to be before you people wake up?
Well, who knows? I mean, I could say the same.
And I know you can't. It's a rhetorical question.
You can say the same thing as an outside observer about any country. I can say, how long is it going to be before the Saudis rise up against their king, since so many of them are treated like dirt? I'm not a Saudi. I have no idea what their level of tolerance until they finally say, too far. I don't know what that is. And as far as here in this country, I don't know what it is here either. But I'll guarantee you, we will damn sure find out. That's coming. Blue, I gotta leave it there. Take care. We'll talk again. We'll be right back.
What do I do when my love is away? I tell you, don't say it no more.
Before the hour, Rick is in Fargo, North Dakota. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, I was going to ask you, you're probably the only one that can answer this question. What are the prisoner of war? We're in two wars, but there's no prisoners. Why do they consider everybody a terrorist, not a prisoner of war?
Well, we're not fighting against an organized army. That's the problem from a strategic as well as a tactical standpoint. How do you fight against just a general population. Who was the army in Iraq? There was no army in Iraq. The Republican Guard, aptly named, they were destroyed during the first Gulf War. Who provided resistance in Iraq? As far as there were militias, Shia militias that resisted the American invasion. As far as Afghanistan is concerned, the people resisting in Afghanistan are the same people, basically, who resisted the British in the 1700s, who resisted the Russians in the 1900s, and now they're resisting us in the 2000s. It's not an army. So if you don't have chains of command and headquarters and this general and that colonel and so on and so forth, how do you take prisoners of war? And we're not operating in a state of declared war. The Congress never authorized this. The last time the U.S. Congress authorized a war as per the U.S. Constitution was against the Japanese in December of 1941. So how do you take war prisoners when war has not been declared? Both these invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq were opportunistic actions taken by a Republican administration and backed at the time by a population that was brain dead. Our population. We have no business being. Why are we in Afghanistan? I mean, yeah. I wish somebody would answer that. Why are we in Iraq? I know why we're in Iraq. We went to Iraq to steal the oil. But Afghanistan, why are we there? To cover the right flank against Iran, to cover the left flank against Pakistan? I have no idea. But Afghanistan was as much of a threat to us as Antarctica is a threat to us. There was no threat. I've talked about this 100 times. Whatever madrasas or terror camps or whatever you want to call them that were operating in Afghanistan were being financed by the Saudis, who were business partners of the Bush family. I mean, Jesus, it's insane. It's insane. So I don't know if that answers your question. Why are there no prisoners of war? There's no war. We are occupiers. We invaded other people's countries with no provocation and occupied them and then started swooping up people that were handed to us and identified by third parties as terrorists. So we brought them here and into Guantanamo. We didn't have the guts to bring them here. We brought Nazis here. We brought Italians here during World War II. We had the viciousness to lock up Japanese Americans during World War II. We had POW camps all over the South where German soldiers were brought. But all of a sudden, we can't bring tribesmen from the mountains of Afghanistan because, ooh, they might get us. This is madness. Yeah. What happened here, Rick? We live in an insane asylum.
Absolutely. And when we win, what does that look like? I've asked that several times. Well, what does it look like when we win?
Well, there is no win. That's the whole point. There is no way to win. If you want to know what we win looks like, I'll give you an example. Vietnam. Yeah. That's what we win looks like. When we declare that we've had enough and we leave the people who assisted our invasion to rot and be hacked alive in their own blood when our former enemy takes over. So if you want an image of we win, think about the helicopters on top of the U.S. Embassy in downtown Saigon in 74, with people hanging on to the struts of those helicopters trying to get out because they were freedom fighters in Vietnam, the same thing that the Vichy French were to the French resistance who fought the Nazis. They were collaborators, and they were going to die. So that's what it looks like when we win, as far as Afghanistan or Iraq is concerned.
Exactly. I remember that. I was in a service at the time. I was over in England, and I was watching that, and it just horrendous.
It was awful. Yeah, it was awful.
Too, about this Wisconsin thing, if it continues on and they're saying the teachers can't, they shouldn't retire at 55, well, they're going to start going after the military. Why would you retire at 39, 40? Just why, if they succeed at this, they're going to keep on and on and on.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Hey, Rick, I got to get out of here. We're out of time, flat out of time. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate your comments. Take care. March 19th, Washington, D.C. Maybe I'll see you there. I'll be there. Maybe you will. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.